How's it going, everybody? Pete Jensen and Rob Reese back with you here on NHL Fantasy on Ice on this Wednesday morning, breaking down all the playoff races out there. Robbie, I know there's a little thing going on between the two New York teams. They got a couple of matchups coming up, but the Rangers are on everybody's tail in the East Division, right?
They are. I mean, they're 10 points out of first place in the division quietly now after winning three games in a row. They're right on the heels of both Boston and the Islanders. So really now, Pete, you look at a team like the New York Islanders who were well on their way to competing for first in the division. Now over their past 16 games, they can't buy a goal. Or excuse me, their past 10 games, I think they scored 16 goals or something terrible like that. And now the Rangers, they're making ground. Their goal differential has been great for the past 2 months. Now it's been right up there, tops in the league, top 10. So this is a team that really can do it. I don't think they're going to, but their next two games are coincidentally against the New York Islanders. So it's a good opportunity right there to take two and swap places.
And right off the bat, from what we hear, Semyon Varlamov had some type of soreness. He was expected, I guess, to back up Ilya Sorokin, but he did not back him up. So that like day-to-day marker, especially heading into the Ranger games, is a big concern, right? Because they've been mixing and matching starts for the better part of two or three seasons under Barry Trotz with different goaltenders. But if you put it all on the onus, all on a rookie like Sorokin, who I know had one of his worst games of the whole season recently against the Capitals, but I'm thinking about the one way back at the beginning. It was like a rude awakening against those Rangers. So if they're in his head and they can crack him and win those two games somehow, if they're facing Sorokin, that's where things would really get interesting. And there would be actually a chance that the Rangers could pass the Islanders, because those trade deadline acquisitions, Robbie, they're just not mustering much right now. 2 points in 10 games for Kyle Palmieri with the Islanders. That's not cutting it.
Yeah, it's not. And it's really never enough unless you go out and get the star player. You get a guy that can, you know, score with, you know, 30 goals and whatever. And Palmieri is close to that, but he's not. On a team like the Islanders, you have to consider, and I was thinking this last night when I was watching a couple of the East games, it's like Pittsburgh has guys on the second line that can score with anybody. Washington obviously has guys on the second, even third line that can trade chances and score with anybody. I mean, Daniel Sprong, you put this guy on the top line, he's scoring every single game. The Islanders just don't have a guy like that yet. Even Wahlstrom, you know, he looked great when he first got going this year, but then cooled off. You know, same thing with Bellows, look good at times. Those guys just aren't ready yet, and that's fine. It's not a long-term concern, I don't think, for the Islanders, but clearly we've seen this now, Pete, for two or three seasons in a row where the Islanders just can't get enough juice out of their top guys, and then their depth isn't good enough either. So it is a concern. Now, the reason why I think the Islanders will be okay is because of their schedule. They've got two games against Buffalo left and two games against the New Jersey Devils. The only reason they even go 500 in those games is because both Buffalo and New Jersey want to play the role of spoiler this year. I'm just not seeing that. Whereas you look at the Rangers schedule, they've got two games against Washington, two games against the Islanders, and two games against Boston. I mean, that is a tough sledding job. And, you know, as soon as I got high on the Rangers, which has been 15 times already this season, the next game they get blown out 7-0. And it's like I have to abandon the take. So I'm not going to sit here and beat the drum yet. I think it is remarkable that they've been able to recover ground and are still in this place this year. Credit to Shesterkin. Major credit goes to Mika Zibanejad. And I think the cherry on top goes to Panarin, who is scoring with anybody at the top of the league leaderboard now.
For sure, man. And Adam Fox too. I mean, the leaderboard in points since Panarin came back from the leave of absence on March 13th is unbelievable. Panarin number one, Zibanejad number two, Fox number four, and the Rangers offense over that time frame, second in goals per game in the whole NHL, behind only the Colorado Avalanche, almost four goals per game in the stretch. And good note from our producer, Bobby, they're plus 35 or something like that in terms of the goal differential on the season now, which is fifth in the NHL. And the only teams ahead of them are the juggernauts like Tampa Bay, Vegas, you know, Colorado and Carolina. So, I mean, that's an incredible stat. It shows that if the Rangers, like we've said previously on the show, if they were in another division, they would be a surefire playoff team with this second half surge. It's just unfortunate for them if they do end up missing it that they drew the tough straw. But again, even if they do miss it, I think that they've learned. Remember how they got blitzed by the Hurricanes and they struggled against playing the same opponent last postseason. It was a rude awakening. Now they're playing the same opponents. They've been able to crack everybody at one time or another, whether it's Boston or the Islanders or not so much Pittsburgh, but Washington even, they've had some nice wins against. This will carry over to next season because they've learned to beat the tough teams. And then when they get the cakewalk games sprinkled in, you know, over the course of the whole season, playing the Western Conference teams and stuff like that, I think it's going to benefit the Rangers, this late surge, for the long run.
And you have to point out that in the month of April, they've played the Devils 5 times. They've played the Buffalo right. Sabres 4 times. So I can't get too high on this team. I think Washington would have a plus 55 goal differential with a schedule like that in 1 month. So, you know, there is credit to give the Rangers and some praises to be sung here. But the difference here, I think, Pete, that we're seeing lately too, that I'm really excited about for this team in particular next season, Lafreniere now is strung together a 3-game point streak. You're starting to see shades of the first overall player emerging. And it's always great. You know it better than anyone, Pete. In fantasy, when a player ends well to a season, it automatically boosts their draft capital going into next year because we have that fresh in our minds. There's been a couple great examples of that the last few seasons, and I think Lafreniere is going to be a guy that benefits from that big time. Now, I guess the only concern in keeper leagues that you have is that David Quinn, Coach Quinn, still has him on a yo-yo with his ice time. So that's the only part where, you know, I want to see his role kind of become more clear heading into next season. But I think it's a great storyline. And I hope, Pete, I hope for our sake that this East race does come down to the wire, because it just adds one more good storyline to close out not only the fantasy season, but the regular hockey season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have a race with the Blues and the Coyotes. We have a race with the Predators and the Stars. And now we might have a race between the Rangers and the Islanders with a couple of head-to-head meetings. So it'll be good theater down the stretch, even if it's all for nothing for the Rangers. They're putting up a nice fight here after a lot of adversity this season. So give them a lot of credit. And speaking of adversity, I think a great parallel between Lafreniere is what we saw early in the season with that red-hot start from Jack Hughes for the Devils. And then he tapered off after the Devils had that COVID outbreak and they were kind of, you know, not playing for a while. And then he came back and the Devils were just, you know, they hit a wall, like Chris Wassel said on one of the previous shows. So, but now Jack Hughes is heating up and he's one of the best shots on goal producers, had another huge game in the win over the Flyers yesterday. So that's what we're talking about. Like Lafreniere is building up even more momentum than Hughes did. But then that second year with the familiarity and all the comfort level and everything like that, you could see him really skyrocket next season, especially if he's playing with Zibanejad and Pavel Buchnevich like he is right now.
Yeah, and Hughes is playing now at 0.55 points per game over this season, Pete, which is pretty good. His progression went from 0.33 points per game his rookie season to 0.55. Like, that's a tremendous jump, especially with the COVID concerns that you mentioned. You know, Philadelphia was another team that got derailed by that. I mean, we've seen it happen. It's unfortunate that happened this season, I think, to all those clubs, but it is what it is at this point, right? And all we can do is kind of reflect on the recent performance as it stabilized. And you have to love what you've seen from Jack Hughes. It's to the point where, you know, you watch him on that top line there. Sharon Govich is up there. You know, they just have this young thing going on. And the interesting thing that I've noticed about this Devils team after they got rid of Zajac and Palmieri, two guys that were logging big minutes for them at the forward position, you know, all these young guys are really benefiting from the 16, 17, 18 minutes per game. And you almost look at it like, huh, like you don't notice that those two big instrumental guys are gone. And it's a really good thing for the Devils, especially as we wrap up the regular season here.
Right. You'd much rather see, like, just to compare, like, what's going on with the Sharks. They just won the other day, but they lost, like, what, 8 of their past 9? And look at some of the guys they're rolling out on that team, like former star players with Burns and Carlson, Evander Kane, all these, right, Couture and Hurdle. Meanwhile, with the Devils, they're playing loose. They're out there, like, playing for their future roles. You've seen since that trade of Palmieri and Zajac, we've seen when they're healthy, guys like Pavel Zacha, really productive. Jesper Bratt, really productive. Sharon Govich, Jack Hughes. They're all like, what, 23 and younger on the whole top six, pretty much. But it makes you more excited than seeing a bunch of has-beens out there underperforming. So I actually like the organizational direction of the Devils, not necessarily to compete for the playoffs next season, But just they're going to see what they have in these young players. They're going to let them fly, let them loose, and, you know, get some offense going. I mean, even in some of those losses, right, they're scoring 5-6 goals. It's been a sneaky garbage time value for the Devils.
And think about a healthy Nico Hischier over a full season, too. He was battling injuries in training camp. He's been up and down this season. You know, when he's in the lineup stabilized, too, you've got two number one picks there as your first and second center. And then you've got guys, you know, on the long side of them. I think it's Jani Kukkonen. Excuse me if I pronounce that wrong. I'm not the best with those names. Not as bad as Davey, I'll say that. But I have been sure for it before. It's all right. But I think Jani Kukkonen, he's been pretty solid, too, Pete. 22 points in 43 games, skating on the top line now alongside Jaren Govich and Hughes. I mean, that's another bright spot for the future. And then I think the interesting thing about that team, though, in fantasy is, we, you know, after the draft and then when they acquired PK Subban and then drafted Jack Hughes in 2019, you kind of felt like, all right, like this team is rounding the corner. They took a step back. And now they're kind of actually rounding that corner, I think, where we thought they'd be in fantasy and in competing in the division next year. So I'm really excited about the tri-state area hockey for next season. And it's really nice to see these younger teams kind of find some chemistry now and end the season on a high note. I think that's really important.
For sure, man. And speaking of younger players right now, a huge storyline the past week or so has been these college top performers coming into the NHL, getting their shot. Most notably, Spencer Knight, who won his debut. We talked at length about that, but then he came in yesterday. They were losing 4-3. He came in for Bob in the third period, stopped all 9 shots he faced, gets his second win. Florida scores 4 unanswered. Chris Drieger has already burned me in my fantasy playoffs. He's out. He got injured again the other day, so he's day-to-day. I don't know what's going to happen with him. I have him locked in my weekly league. But back to Spencer Knight. You know, he's a real option here because we know how Bob has been so inconsistent. And then also Cole Caulfield finally got his debut. They were able to fit him into the salary cap equation in Montreal, had 4 shots on goal the other day. But like we expect him to produce in the top 6 for Montreal. So like between Spencer Knight and Cole Caulfield, these are big fantasy storylines and guys that I would pick up. I would pick up either or both of them in a deep league.
Absolutely. And I think right now you can still get some value for each of those players. If you're in a 1-week championship, I'd roll the dice. If you're in a 2-week, it makes even more sense for each of these players. And I think, you know, I would say if you ask me right now, who are you more excited about for next season? I would say equally both. And that's not a cop-out answer. That's because both have such a high ceiling. And especially with Florida's goaltending situation now, Drieger probably out the door this summer. We can all speculate that's a likely outcome there in Florida. And with Bobrovsky, yes, they paid him all that money, but that doesn't guarantee he's going to start, Pete. I mean, we've seen it now, 2 seasons. It doesn't mean he's going to get every start, especially with Coach Q. He's going to ride the hot hand, period. And if you watch their game against Nashville on Tuesday night, there's no better example of them going down 4-3 heading into the third period and Spencer Knight coming in, and it just changes the entire energy of the team. They rattle off 4 goals. And by the way, James needs to get back on the program here and explain to me why he is not pressing the keeper button on Sam Bennett for next season. This guy is ripping it up right now, Pete. He played 21 minutes last night, had 3 apples, and Huberdeau is on fire playing alongside this guy. I just don't know why. And if you have both of those guys, I would not hesitate to keep both of them after what we've seen from Florida.
Oh my God. I know. I mean, that line is going to be the second line of the future, right? Like they can tinker with Barkov's line once Verhaeghe comes back and stuff like that. But I mean, they're not messing with that line probably for the rest of the season and for next season as well, assuming that the other guys are coming back with Bennett being an RFA. There's a great chance of that after his amazing start to his Panthers career. And I even saw a quote, like Bennett said, the first few games with Florida have been the most fun he's had in his whole career, which maybe is a little bit of a shot at the Flames and how things went south with them, you know, in terms of deploying him and stuff. But it's a nice fresh start. And that's what we love about the trade deadline. I mean, Sam Bennett on the pecking order of players traded at the deadline was like middle tier, maybe worth mentioning in fantasy, but not really somebody that you ever would have gone and picked up the first second you saw the trade just because of how deep Florida is. But they did have that second line center hole ever since they traded away Trocheck last year, and he's taken full advantage of it. So it's been nice to see the revival of a once promising prospect in the NHL, producing at this level and covering categories like a madman, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's incredible. And think beyond that too, beyond the Sam Bennett second line, you've got two guys waiting in the wings that could be top six fixtures next year. They could be third line contributors, or could be even a spot on the first power play for either one. One is Owen Tippett, who's had 13 shots on goal in his past two games. The one game against Nashville, he played 10 minutes and had five shots. Last night, he played 14 minutes, had eight shots. I mean, you're starting to see that could be a big-time contributor for them. And then Dennis Cinkel, let's not forget about, too, who I think he's going to be in the lineup more consistently next year. They're probably going to move around a few pieces in the forward group outside of that second line going into next year. So you're going to see those two players, I think, make an impact, too. Florida's looking pretty scary deep now, and I think that's what ultimately is going to benefit them and keep them on the next level. You've got a leader like Sasha Barkov, who I think anybody would want to play for. This guy plays his heart out every single night. You've got a really solid back end with Ekblad, who we cannot forget, who had a tremendous year, was in the Norris conversation before he went down with an injury. Mackenzie Weegar was a great fixture for him on their top pairing. And then, you know, guys below that even were contributing, like Forsling, like Montour has been pretty solid for them too. So I really like what I see here from Florida. And then for the Cole Caulfield situation, you know, I know that Montreal probably doesn't have as exciting of a future, you know, as the Florida Panthers do, but I think, you know, the electricity he brings to that team right away, whether he's producing or not, is going to really help them. I think that's the exact player that they could have used all season long. Even when they had their healthy guys in the lineup, Pete, with Gallagher, I think they could have used a spark plug player like Caulfield. And you can see with Toffoli, he can play on the left side, you know, and his contract looks really, really good right now. So he's kept it up all season. Big credit to him as well. But I think when they start to figure out their top six group for next year, I think you're going to see Cole Caulfield being sharpied in there, not just a hypothetical pencil situation.
Right. And the case for Cole Caulfield being added right now, like you might say, why is he at 100 in our forward rankings for fantasy for the rest of the season? Because he's got untapped potential and he's playing in the top six. Like if he's out there with Philip Deneau, who's a sneaky fantasy producer through the years, and Thomas Tatar on the other wing. I know he's been a little banged up lately, but like it's decent lineup placement, right? That's Brendan Gallagher's lineup placement. So you would have Brendan Gallagher in the lineup if he was healthy. Of course, he would provide more category coverage than Caulfield would, but like it's a platform for Caulfield to make a difference here. A lot of people, because of his size or lack thereof, compare him to Johnny Gaudreau, a former college hockey stud that made a smooth transition into superstardom in the NHL. I think it's a fair one. I would say that like Gaudreau always had Monahan, a really good center, in his best years. Like, I wonder about that in Montreal. Maybe it could be a Suzuki. Other than that, you know, I just don't see someone that's going to maybe maximize his game compared to if he was on other teams around the league, other elite teams with really strong one or two Cs. But like, it's still a really good spot for Cole Caulfield. And they won that game the other day when he came in. Like, that was a big boost for the Canadiens, even if he didn't score a point. Montreal needed everything that they could get to try to fend off either the Canucks or the Flames in the standings. And this might just be the spark that they get to get into the playoffs. And will make them a dangerous team if he's able to play in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's true. And I think now we're kind of seeing the Canucks, as you mentioned. I don't know. They dropped 2-1 against the Senators. I mean, it was a tight game, but it does look like they don't have enough now, Pete, without Elias Pettersson in the lineup. Maybe they still do. I mean, the Canucks are one of those teams kind of like the Rangers this year where, you know, as soon as you jump off the boat, they look great the next night type of thing. So I'm not ready to fully, you know, say that they're completely flat and done, but it's going to be a lot of ground to make up. And I think Caulfield's the guy from Montreal that's going to provide not only the offense the rest of the way, but that boost that they needed, probably that young energy that they needed to really get those guys solidified in the fourth spot. So I think it'd be pretty crazy if we saw anything happen with Vancouver the rest of the way.
Well, Vancouver could really make the NHL schedule makers have a tough job. And just like in general, like down the stretch of the season with the playoffs looming, you know, if they're looking at the playoffs to start right the second week of May around there, like Vancouver has only played 42 games out of their 56 game schedule. So if they're even remotely in the playoff conversation, it's going to be interesting what they're going to do, what the NHL is going to do, because yeah, you can't just I mean, I guess last year they went to points percentage, but you know, the points percentage even is very close between Vancouver and Montreal all of a sudden. So like, it's just something to keep an eye on for fantasy. I know, you know, Vancouver still got a bunch of games the next 2 weeks, which count in the fantasy playoffs. So we've been, you know, beating the drum on all those secondary guys from Vancouver, how they can make a difference in your fantasy league. And of course the top guys like Horvat and Besser and Miller and Quinn Hughes are all, you know, multi-point potential any given night. So yeah, just keep an eye on Vancouver. The one thing different between them and the Rangers are a couple points behind, but they only got six games left. If the, what the Canucks got 14 games left, you yeah. can a bunch against like the same teams, some playoff teams, you never know what can happen with Vancouver. So keep a keen eye on that situation.
And I do want to highlight one player from the Canucks I think deserves some praise is Brock Besser, who's played a full season for them so far. He's played in all 42 games. You know, in fantasy, I think the only thing that's held him back the previous years from really, you know, going onto the scene and becoming that player we know he can be is that he hasn't been healthy, right? So this season is a big time moment for Brock Besser, I think, to solidify himself as a top 75 fantasy asset moving forward, a great position in right wing. And certainly, you know, the Canucks are a team that, well, it was, you know, probably likely they were going to regress a little bit this season. Not to this point, I think. I think they should still be right on Montreal's heels no matter what. And they still could be. I guess, you know, they have the games where they technically still could be at this point. But I do think next year they're going to be in a really, really good position to torch their division and to kind of get back to the form that we've seen, especially because Demko, too, has solidified himself as a guy that can start most nights. Obviously, Braden Holtby's the guy playing now, but I think it's because Demko's a little bit banged up.
Right. And they're going to go back to the Pacific Division, right? Last we checked. So that's a lot more, maybe not as favorable, but like it's, there are a lot of teams to feast on between the California teams. You're going to have with the expansion, Seattle Kraken, the Coyotes, I think are going to move to the Central, but you know, there are some teams that are ripe for beating on most nights in that division. So yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure for the Vancouver Canucks. They're definitely like the Rangers creating some momentum on their side, and they are 10 points behind the Canadiens, but have five games in hand. So, and the points percentage 5-4-3 for Montreal, 4-8-8. This is entering Wednesday's action. So room for a flip in one of those two categories and anything can happen. So one guy, Robbie, that I wanted to mention, give some love to, cause he's been carrying our fantasy team lately for the Buffalo Sabres, Sam Reinhart. We picked this guy up last week. He's had like five or six goals since we picked him up, including a hat trick, scored their only goal for Buffalo yesterday. And this guy's like around the top 10 in the whole NHL in goals this year, playing without Jack Eichel for the bulk of the season. So what do you make of Sam Reinhart down the stretch and like moving forward for Buffalo? I mean, they got a real gem here in this player.
He's a quality player, Pete. I mean, not only has he got 22 goals in 48 games, which is phenomenal, but he's contributing on the power play too. He's up to 16 power play points on a Buffalo unit that you don't really get too excited about, right? And then you also have Olofsson with 15. So both those guys, Reinhardt's got 10 power play goals, Olofsson's got 7. I mean, you're already putting together a really solid first unit for next season. I cannot explain to you why it's happened without Jack Eichel and without Taylor Hall in the lineup. That I'll never be able to break that down properly. You know, whether it's something behind the scenes, whether it's something that on ice chemistry, who knows? I could not begin to guess that. But I think it's really encouraging if you picked up Sam Reinhart this season and you can even stream Buffalo guys at this point, is to me, it's a thing of beauty because that's where you're going to get your most value. Even a guy like Dahlin, I think if he's available, he's been hot enough lately where you can put him in your lineup. And yeah, you're going to maybe get some minus, but I wouldn't worry about the dashes as so much as I would want those kind of secondary points and that lethal exposure now to a guy like Sam Reinhart.
And Reinhart, checking right now, tied for 10th in the NHL in goals with, look at these names, Kirill Kaprizov, Max Pacioretty, and Kyle Connor. So really the upper echelon of goal scorers in the league, and also like some up and coming players like Kaprizov, and right on like the tail of Draisaitl and Alex DeBrincat. So totally real deal. Nobody's talking about him. I can't believe we got him that late in our Roto Experts League. He's making us look like experts right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, especially if we can win the trophy with the guy and we've been streaming these Sabres guys. I mean, that'll be the real winners, Pete. So I love those low ownership moves. Well, and in his case, I mean, I'm surprised that people cut ties with them. I mean, I guess I don't blame them in one sense, because after, you know, Eichel's announced out for the regular season, after they trade Taylor Hall, you're thinking, where's the value? But surprisingly, it still exists. And to kind of go on those stats there, he's actually tied for third in power play goals with elite company in Austin Matthews, Leon Draisaitl, Steven Stamkos, Kyle Connor, and TJ Oshie this year. So he's inserted himself into that conversation. And I really want to see this extrapolated over an 82 game season.
Well, maybe the biggest thing, right, is that he's playing center. I mean, when Eichel comes back, you got Eichel on the first line center and Reinhardt on the second line center. That's the blueprint of the team moving forward. Mittelstadt playing well at center as well. All of a sudden, you got some young players that are showing you a lot through the years, especially this year with Mittelstadt and Sam Reinhardt. So, you know, all of a sudden, things looking up a little bit with the resurgence of Dahlin, resurgence of Sam Reinhardt, who, like you said, you can't explain it, because Reinhardt coming into this season could have been viewed as solely a product of playing on the right side of Jack Eichel for the past two or three seasons. And that was why he was hitting 50 to 60 points in each season. But I mean, this is like next step without Eichel. That means that next year you play him away from Eichel, play them together on the power play one, but play them on separate lines, and you're golden. You'll be more competitive as a team next year.
Yeah. Now, just to play devil's advocate, don't you maybe think that this Jack Eichel trade situation could come to fruition this summer, just based off what we've seen of Buffalo after the coaching change, after, you know, them kind of rallying around these younger guys? I mean, even Mittelstadt now looks like the player that he was drafted to be. I could see them doing it now. I would have said no way earlier in the season, kind of before we've seen everything unfold. I don't want to be overreact to it now, but I certainly think it's more of a conversation than it used to be.
Right. Eichel is a top 25 player in the whole NHL. No debates about it. Nobody would argue against that. So what you could fetch in return for him is enormous in terms of picks, in terms of prospects, in terms of players who could also play well for you here and now and supplement the roster up there, whether on defense or on the forward group. They'll have some options to play with in free agency. You expect them to be, looking to bring Ullmark back, but maybe they could even get a nice 1B goalie for next year in free agency. So not to get too heavy on the Sabres, but yeah, they could definitely still make a move and be a little more competitive next year. But yeah, Jack Eichel is, how many coaching changes have there been with Jack Eichel?
Yeah.
I mean, you pin it on him now because he's the captain, but he's always been their star player ever since he stepped on the ice there. So, I mean, maybe it's just like Kruger was a bad coach and Granato's a great coach and they're going to keep Granato. Maybe we'll see. He's making a case for it, but like, these are all storylines to play with. The people in the organization know better than us or any fans out there, you know, whether or not Eichel meshes well with the new coaches each time. Yeah. They've seen it firsthand. We really don't know. We can only speculate about it.
Yeah, and it should be interesting too, because, you know, teams like the Rangers are, you know, they're always going to be in the mix for a big name player like that. So it should be a fun offseason, no question about it. I do want to talk a little bit about the slate tonight, because there's some good value on this board. The one that jumps out to me, Pete, is the Blues. Somehow, after beating the Avs twice, they're plus 120 on the road against the Minnesota Wild. I mean, have you seen enough from the Blues in those two wins that is kind of saying, okay, this is the team that is going to contend in the playoffs, so we've kind of get to know? Or are you kind of saying, this is a little bit fishy? How can they be dogs?
Well, I mean, in hindsight, I shouldn't have taken the Avalanche as a sledge the other day. I didn't know that Brandon Saad would be out, but I did know that Grubauer and Rantanen would be out. And I did say, even when I picked my sledge, I said that the Blues might be the more desperate team, but the Avalanche might be a little too talented. Rare sledge loss for me, but the Blues earned it. They've earned my respect now. And I think the St. Louis Blues are an absolute lock. I mean, even through their inconsistencies, after what I've seen lately, taking two out of three from the Avs, I mean, they are a lock to make the playoffs. There's no chance, at least in my book, that the Coyotes are going to pass them, because that showed me everything I needed to know about St. Louis. So, and they have a nice wrinkle for their top line now. They got Shen at left wing, O'Reilly at center, and David Perron is back from the third line to the first line. in a matter of days and had a huge game the other day. So that top line all of a sudden is like a top 15 top line in the whole league, and that should power them into the playoffs. So I've seen enough. I like the Blues to get that fourth spot without hesitation now.
Yeah, and on just based on history, I think if you're the one seed in that division, whether it's going to be Vegas or Colorado, I mean, you don't want to play St. Louis in round one if they make it. You simply do not, based on history and a number of other factors, that they're a very good hockey team. They just played a little bit inconsistent this year. So that, to me, jumps out big time. I do think it's notable that St. Louis this year has been a little bit better on the road. They're 12-8-2, so I like that matchup a lot for them against Minnesota, who I would say on the flip side is a little bit overachieved. Don't get me wrong, they're a very good hockey team, but I think if you kind of compare Minnesota and St. Louis, I would say St. Louis severely underperformed. Minnesota exceeded expectations a little bit, so I think that's going to be a really key game to zero in on. I would take the Blues in that one. I do think it's notable, though, that the Arizona Coyotes have gotten major production from Chychrun, who has 14 points in his past 13 games at the defenseman position, and Goligoski, who has 12 points in his past 13 games in the month of April. How can you explain that those two D-men are top five each in scoring at the position in the month of April, and yet they can't buy a W?
Yeah, I mean, their forward group is a little too inconsistent. It's alarming, too, when you see two defensemen like that producing among the top six defensemen in the whole league since the beginning of April. And then you also see, like, Oliver Ekman-Larsson drop out of your top 50 defenseman rankings this week for fantasy. So changing of the guard there, Chychrun is clearly the guy. He's elite defenseman. He's in your top 10. Goligoski's one of the biggest risers. Even if the Coyotes are going to bow out here in the playoff race eventually, which we expect to happen, obviously they had a bit of a blunder of a loss the other day to the Sharks, which also lends to what I was saying about why I think the Blues are a lock. But this is not even hidden fantasy value anymore. Everybody has to go out there and realize what's going on in Arizona from the back end out, and how these two guys, Chychrun and Goligoski, are making a huge impact in fantasy.
Well, Arizona, I mean, minus 115 against San Jose. I do like that for them tonight. I think they get back in the W column for sure. I just don't think they have what the Blues have, you know, to get into the playoffs. I would love for one of their forwards to kind of be the guy. I mean, whether it's Phil Kessel, whoever it is, that kind of takes the reins and starts scoring every game, but it just doesn't happen for them. And we've kind of seen that the past few years, even when they acquired Taylor Hall, they didn't have enough to have a guy score like that. So it's a little bit frustrating, especially if you're a Coyotes fan. I certainly feel your frustration, because when you have guys scoring on the back end, that normally means that your forwards are producing too. They just don't have that luxury right now. So kind of a flip-flop situation for them. Another team I think is going to end strong is the LA Kings. They've got a nice little matchup there against the Ducks tonight. Obviously, you're not going to get a great price on anybody playing the Ducks. Again, I don't know where the Stolarz comment from James came on Monday, not to chirp him, but I'm glad I said something, because I'm like, that just doesn't sit well with me. But I do like the Kings a lot tonight. It is against the Ducks, but I think that's going to be a team too, Pete. Enter them into the conversation about New Jersey and Buffalo, where they've got so many young guys kind of coming into the lineup, and I think that's going to benefit them down the way.
Well, yeah, hopefully the Kings finish strong, because they finished strong last season and it led to a hot start this year, at least. Of course, they're a flawed team. They have to, you know, start to, I think, maybe change the guard a little bit. I know they're not going to ever trade or move on from Kopitar and Doughty, but maybe just like giving someone else other than Dustin Brown a chance on the top line next year is something that that team should consider doing. But yeah, I mean, I think like there's going to be sneaky value on the LA Kings the rest of the season for fantasy and DFS, no question, especially with any easy matchups like this against the Anaheim Ducks. So, and the Ducks are, I mean, we were looking at Jamie Drysdale, a player that we both like, and he's like over his past five games, he's minus 11. That's the scope of the Anaheim Ducks right now. Unfortunately, they chose not to play Zegras anymore in the NHL. They're playing the defenseman Drysdale there, and, you know, just not much production. And then of course that column has been brutal for anybody who picked him up in a fantasy keeper league and is trying to get something out of him here and now. But yeah, I mean, I don't have a strong sense on that game. I like the Kings a little bit more. There are some good games on the slate though, like Toronto, Montreal is a great one. I'm excited to see if Caulfield is in again, if he can hang with the big dogs on Toronto and stuff like that. So that's going to be a big watch game for me to see what Caulfield can do in that game. And I would roll him out in that game against Toronto. That could be suddenly could be a higher scoring game, I think, for those two teams.
I agree with you. I'd be rolling him out every night they play now, regardless of the opponent. I do think if you have plans this Wednesday night, you might want to cancel because you have two other marquee matchups in the Edmonton Oilers versus the Winnipeg Jets. That's going to be a blockbuster. Both those teams jockeying for the second position in the division. That'll be a good one. And that could even be the first round playoff matchup preview right there. So you're definitely going to want to keep an eye on that. And then the Avalanche Golden Knights game is going to be fantastic. The Avalanche are a rare underdog this season, a plus 120 in that game. So if you like a little bounce back appeal, I could see you buying into the Avs tonight, despite the elephant in the room, which is their goaltending concerns.
Yeah, so JoJo got lit up a little bit the other day, only faced like 20 shots, but gave up 4 goals. So he burned me. I played him in one league and talked about him on the network. So that was a little bit humbling for sure. But anyway, so for the Avalanche, the good news for them, not for tonight, but for later in the week, is they could get back any of these three players, two of them elite ones, Rantanen, Grubauer, Jonas Donskoy, as early as Friday. None of them are going to play tonight, but the Rantanen, like Grubauer, has been taken off the COVID protocol list. So that's really good things for, you know, if you have a ticket on the Avalanche to go far in the playoffs, they're going to get these guys back. It sounds a few games prior to the start of the postseason, which is good to get those guys back in rhythm and stuff like that. So that's really good news for sure. And then, yeah, as far as the Oilers, I mean, Jesse Puljujarvi, I think, is a player, Robbie, that we're picking in DFS tonight. Check out the story, NHL.com/fantasy, as always. But this is a guy who's had a good shot volume all season or most of the season, but now is starting to ignite, right, playing with McDavid and Draisaitl, as he should. And he's making a big impact with 7 points in his past 6 games.
Oh, and listening to this stat, I mean, Edmonton at Winnipeg this season, Oilers are 6-2-0. McDavid has 19 points, 7 goals, 12 assists in those 8 games against the Jets this season. Draisaitl has 11 points in 8 games, and Puljujärvi has 7 in those 8 games. Now that they're all together, I mean, that could be a big-time scoring frenzy for them. I did want to ask a couple people on Twitter, if you made it to the championship in fantasy this year, do you have Connor McDavid? He's obviously ripping it up right now. He'll win you the trophy if you have him. I've just never been in a position, Pete, where I've been able to have the first overall pick and then assemble a championship winning team. Normally when I have that first pick, I just never make it for some reason, even with a guy like McDavid. I don't know why that is. I think I struggle to wait too much in the draft, and then I'm kind of overthinking the wraparound picks. So if you have McDavid, obviously you're benefiting big time right now, but I'm curious to see if people ended up making the championship with him selected number one overall.
Right. The highest pick that I had this year was number 2. And it was the easy decision for me to take Nathan MacKinnon in that spot because McDavid was already gone. I might've taken MacKinnon number 1 anyway, but I mean, he's been coming on strong. He's quietly up to number 2 based on performance. He's in the 60s in points. He's right on Draisaitl's tail in the point column and has better category coverage. But then, yeah, McDavid with 80 plus points in 40 plus games. I mean, on the cusp of 2 per game, has been one of the best fantasy, most impressive fantasy stats for sure of all the years that we've played in any sport. So what he's done in the shortened season. So major shout out to McDavid, and you can still get a piece of him. Puljujarvi is very low roster percentage in season long leagues, Yahoo, ESPN, whatever you're playing, FanDuel, you know, you can get him at a value. I think he's like 3,800 or something tonight in FanDuel. So great late season trend, and good to see Puljujarvi back in the NHL making a big impact.
Do you think there's any way McDavid touches triple digits this year? He's got 81 and 46. Do you think it's possible? I mean, I doubt it, but would that not be the craziest thing you've seen in the past 10 years?
Yeah. I mean, we spoke about that like 3 or 4 months ago, like based on his amazing start to the season, whether it'd be possible, and he has kept it going. So he's going to make it interesting. It's going to be tough, but all it takes is one favorable matchup and he could get you 5 or 6 points in one game, right? I mean, not many other players in the league even have that capability on any given night, but McDavid could score like 12 points in 2 games and then do it all of a sudden. So I'm not betting against that guy anymore.
I would not. If you had to ask me yes or no right now, I would just say yes, because I can't go against McDavid. There's no freaking way. I think it'll be down to the wire. I mean, it's probably a personal goal too. So, you know, when you set those goals, I'm sure if you're talented like McDavid, you can hit it. Depending on how the Oilers play, obviously they've been a little up and down, but I'm still excited. I think that's going to be the one of the better fantasy storylines too, to cap out here.
For sure. And one thing I wanted to mention, Turbo came back yesterday, right, for the Carolina Hurricanes. That was a bit of a surprise. We knew it was kind of on the horizon the past few weeks, but they weren't really giving up much information. But Brind'Amour inserted Teravainen, and no points, no shots, but did play 16 and a half minutes. So that's a guy that we'll do our update ahead of the top 200 rankings update, and we'll get Teravainen back in, I'm sure, at least as a fringe top 100 forward. And he'll bring some exposure to Svechnikov and Aho down the stretch, especially that now that Nietzsche is settling in on the second line with Vincent Trocheck. I mean, that top six is loaded. And I think that one thing about Carolina is like their bounce back appeal in many instances this year has been really encouraging. That gives me confidence that they could beat anybody in a 7-game series, because that's what you're going to need to do. You're going to have your slip ups. You're going to have your game three and game five losses. But if you can respond in game four and game sixes, I mean, that's where you win your series and you tilt the momentum back into your favor. So just something I've noticed about Carolina that gives me confidence that they can make the cup final like some of us predicted.
All right, and they blew the Stars, who are very hungry, out of the water 5-1. And Nedeljkovic, another big time performance from him. When you look at his season stat line, it's 13-4-3 with a 932 save percentage and 3 shutouts. I mean, I think he's starting to answer anybody's concerns about them not having Mrazek ready for the playoffs or whatever it may be. I think Nedeljkovic is stepping up and maybe even going to claim that crease if he keeps this thing up.
I mean, you could see Nedeljkovic maybe versus Spencer Knight or something if those teams play each other in the first round. I mean, for the year of the rookie goalie, it would be sensational to see something like that. So, and I wouldn't put it past Spencer Knight to get game one of the cup playoffs if he plays well down the stretch and Bob is a little shaky and Drieger's injured. You never really know. So, and then one other major injury that we didn't get a chance to talk about on Monday before we wrap, Nikolaj Ehlers out for the rest of the regular season with an injury. That's unfortunate because he's been like a top 25 overall player this year, really good at even strength, the whole bit. But where does Winnipeg go from here? I know they got kind of blown out the other day without him against Edmonton. So are you worried about maybe them not having Ehlers for the start of the playoffs?
I think he's been their best forward this year. So I am worried, Pete. I think that's a major, major blow to that team. I mean, it's been nice that we've seen Andrew Kopp, you know, be able to maintain this fantasy relevance. But I think if you look on the right side of their top line, I think they had Mason Appleton skating there recently. And that's just not gonna do it against teams like Edmonton, against teams like Toronto. I mean, you have to be able to compete with an elite top line on both of those teams. And I don't think you're going to get that without a guy like Ehlers on the first or second line for the Jets. So it is a major storyline. I will say this, you know, if they can get a little bit more out of Dubois, I think they're going to be okay. I think he's a guy that can bridge the gap stats. He's been, I think, above expectation this year overall. It's just Dubois needs to play a little bit better, needs to produce. If he can elevate his game, Pete, I think they survive and withstand that injury. If he plays like he has been since he joined Winnipeg, I think they're in trouble.
Yeah, Dubois was so good, point per game through 10 games with Columbus in the playoffs last year. I guess their only hope, if they don't have Ehlers, is for him to regain that type of form, because right now it's like they can't even decide whether to play Dubois at center, left wing, or right wing. Yeah. We've seen Dubois play all three of those positions during his short stint with the Winnipeg Jets. So not that the trade has worked out really well on the other end for Columbus. By no means has it worked out well at all with Lionel Roslovic over the whole tail end of the season. But this is just this disappointing for Dubois, for sure, that he can't even settle on a position because he just dropped out of our top 100 forward rankings. And I don't have the trust that he can, you know, rejoin it anytime soon.
I'm with you. I mean, I would like a lineup placement for him alongside Connor and Wheeler. I think that'll do a lot for any player. So hopefully they can maybe get some chemistry there and right the ship and figure that thing out. But yeah, if Nick is out in the playoffs, I mean, that's going to be a major blow. Hopefully it's not that serious. I know they said missed the remainder of the regular season and then left it a little vague. So we'll keep a close eye on that. But yes, pick up Turbo. That's a perfect in-house replace, actually out-of-house replacement for a player like Ehlers. So you're going to get similar category coverage there. For any more championship questions, don't hesitate to hit us up on Twitter. We're still getting questions rolling in every day. So I'm at NHL Reese, Petey's at NHL Jets, and we're both at NHL Fantasy, on Twitter and Instagram. So make sure to send us your last minute questions.
Get back to you guys soon. Hit us up, as Robbie mentioned, but we're going to do some fun things next week. I think we're going to do a Keeper League episode. Of course, we're going to have our playoff previews. So stay tuned to our episode plan. We'll get at everybody on Twitter, and we'll talk to you guys again very soon. NHL Fantasy on Ice.